Welcome to the Jig Is Up podcast with your hosts, Darcy and Jason. The Jig Is Up is recorded on the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy, as well as the lands of Treaty 6 Nations. We aim to bring you new perspectives and open up conversations about Métis politics, culture, and current events, as well as stories that affect Indigenous from all over. If you like the show, or you don't, or if you want to send us suggestions for guests or topics to discuss on the show, feel free to email us at metispodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on all of the social media at Métis Podcast. All right, welcome back to The Jig Is Up. And today I have a guest with me, Joseph. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Joseph.
Yeah, my name is Joseph Jacquard. I'm the president of l'Association des Acadiens Métis Souriquois. We're based in Nova Scotia, southwestern Nova Scotia, actually. And I've been president in this stretch for the last... This will be my fourth year in a row. This will be my last year as president because in our constitution, it states that the president has to have 2 years serving as a director on the board. And the president's term is a 2 year term, renewable once. So okay. My 4 year, I have one more year left and then we'll pass the torch on.
Well, that's definitely a certain contrast to other organizations. So did you guys do that on purpose? Was that something that your membership wanted from the beginning? Or
it's something that we put in our constitution when we first incorporated,
yeah,
as a society kind of thing, as an association. It has served us very well, actually. Our founding president, Paul Tufts, served the first 4 years. And then I served 4 years as president. Then Paul Tufts again served 2 years. And now this is my fourth year.
Okay.
A stretch again. So somebody else will take the torch next year.
Right on. And what, from your association, I mean, I don't want to get too many specifics or, break any privacy laws or anything, but roughly how large is your organization right now?
We have 1,845, I believe.
Wow.
Proud Cajun Métis members. That's not bad, you know?
That's actually pretty good. Yeah, that's impressive.
It's plus or minus a couple, because we have a genealogy committee. We do a lot of stuff by committees.
Okay. You know?
So we have a genealogy committee that takes care of that. I don't even look at it. kind of thing. We've got other things to do.
Yeah.
But we do stuff by committee. So a lot of our board meetings, I'm asking for the financial report. You know, our treasurer will give the financial report, and the genealogy committee, another committee gives their report. The office committee gives their report. You know what I mean? This kind of stuff. It gets everybody involved.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. Well, and it makes it more of a community feeling of an organization, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And last year we were 10 members on the board, and we picked up a few. We're now 13 board members, which is kind of large. And so the onus is on me at board meetings to keep the topics going, you know, next on the agenda.
Yeah, that's right. Keep everything flowing.
Yeah, keep things flowing. Otherwise, that things can go around and round and round in circles, and you never get anything done.
Yeah.
But so I've learned, you know what I mean, this kind of stuff, how to cut off people. And and you guys take that after the meeting and discuss that between you two. Next on the agenda, you know?
Absolutely. So how did your organization come to be? Like what kind of prompted it to come into being?
It had to do with... Actually, there was a lawyer that used to work for INAC and in Ottawa, and she was originally from here. She's an Acadian Métis. And she said, after Pauli kind of thing, she said, probably the group that fits Pauli the most in Canada would be the Acadians. Wow. Those Acadians of mixed heritage,
yeah.
Mi'kmaq, French ancestry.
Yeah.
And that's how it was decided to put this together.
Okay. Now, I want to get into, like, I know there's a lot of negativity about Eastern Métis. When you say Acadian Métis, like, obviously you guys
have, you know, you said you have a genealogy committee and stuff like that. Obviously, you guys feel that you have proven lines to you know, mixed blood people. What do you say to a lot of the, I guess, negativity that's out there that you guys are just trying to steal things and you're just fake and you're new, you never existed before?
Well, the proof is in the historical documents, you know, and we have historians that are doing the work now, and they're piling this up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of historical proof to it, right from Louis Riel acknowledging our existence, you know?
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so, you know, and genealogy-wise, I did mine, you know, and you do the whole family fan there, I call it, I don't know. And 17 instances of Mi'kmaq blood coming in, yeah. You know, and not just one. I don't just go to one, you know, Mi'kmaq ancestor. There's 17 instances right. coming in. Yeah. And Métis, marrying Métis, marrying Métis, marrying Métis, etc. My God. You know, we have members that have as much, if not more, Mi'kmaq blood than some people that live on reserve. You know, with full status.
Yeah.
You know, and the reserve people, I'll tell you, status people, the Mi'kmaq from around here, they have everything to gain from our friendship.
Yeah.
You know, they should not fear us whatsoever. You know, all we want is friendship from them.
And that's that's an interesting point. And maybe how, just to kind of elaborate on that, how is the relationship between yourselves and the Mi'kmaq in the area?
Well, there are different bands around here. Unfortunately, we don't have very much of a relationship with the Acadia Band Council, locally in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia.
Okay.
We've met with them. They were more interested in financials, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where we wanted to share culture and language, you know. Their language has many French words that come from the Acadian. In the Mi'kmaq language, and the Acadians, in the Acadian language, have many Mi'kmaq words.
Yeah.
You know, Shabog, Shigogan, you know, there's all kinds. There is a band in Digby County, in Bear River.
Yeah.
The Bear River Band, work very much closer with them because they're more culture-based.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Not so monetary. That kind of stuff. And we have a much better relationship with them. And this is what we want to share with them, is culture.
Yeah.
You know, we even have it in our constitution, basically, that we shall, to the Mi'kmaq, we shall do no harm.
Really?
You know, no, yes.
So that's in your constitution of your organization. So, which I find is a stark contrast to all of the news media that says all you guys are trying to do is, you know, out east is cause harm to the First Nations. So that's interesting.
No way. You know, we're trying to be extremely respectful, you know, of theirs, and we don't want to take anything away from them. We shall not do that.
Yeah.
If we have something to gain, fine, but it will not be to their detriment.
Well, and I think that's a wonderful way to do things. And obviously, when the news media and stuff is talking to people from the East Coast, they're obviously not looking at, you know, your guys' goals and missions and stuff like that for your organization.
Yeah.
Because it is there on your website as well.
Everything is there on our website, you know?
Yeah.
And we adhere to our constitution verbatim, you know, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know?
So what has been some of the, I guess, obviously, you guys are working together, you know, culturally. What has been some of the, I guess, has there been any kind of moments or events that kind of stand out for you over the last couple of years where, you know, you really came together with Mi'kmaq and worked together on things like that? Or
really, no, not a whole lot. Not with the Mi'kmaq themselves.
Yeah.
We do get invited to Bear River for their, you know, sweat lodge and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But otherwise than that, no. Of course, there is a movement to be kind of like against us. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Sometimes if you talk to a Mi'kmaq chief on one-on-one, everything is fine. But when he gets to together with the other chiefs, all of a sudden he's not towing the same line.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So you guys are still facing quite a bit of struggle to gain acceptance, even locally out there, as well as, you know, nationally, I guess.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, and having Clément Cartier come down to Nova Scotia and sign an MOU with the Mi'kmaq, you know, doesn't help anything. Certainly not. You know.
Yeah.
Right from when I first heard it, I thought to myself, these Mi'kmaqs, they just signed an MOU with the devil himself. You know.
Well, I've always thought that was interesting because I know that they talk about working together with the Mi'kmaq while they try to take away or work over top of all the First Nations in their what they claim is their territory. So it's very interesting that they did that. They certainly don't do that out west. They don't go to First Nations and sign agreements to work with together with them. So that's very interesting they did that.
Yeah. You know, and it's like every time we have an AGM, our AGM, the first thing I do is acknowledge that we are on unceded Mi'kmaq territory, you know, and we occupy this land by the Mi'kmaq's good graces.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of been the history of Acadia, has it not? I mean, it's always been.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else is there about, like, your organizing? I know, obviously, right now we're in COVID lockdown, but typically, you guys plan a fair number of events throughout the summer months, or...?
Yeah, we do. We actually, this year we got a grant for $1,100 from Heritage Canada, and we're going to be Aboriginal Day celebrations. So I don't know how that's going to turn out with this pandemic stuff, but anyhow. So we'll have to see what's going on.
Yeah.
That's just one of them that we do quite well. We just had our AGM in March here. And we do up that kind of nicely also. We usually get just under 100 people at our AGM.
Okay.
And every year I get told not, I give the president's report and I get told to make it shorter and make it shorter. One year I spoke for an hour and a half and then take questions for 45 minutes. It makes for a lengthy afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyhow.
So what, like I know, and we're going to kind of, I guess, go into some of the negativity that surrounds the Eastern Métis, you know, within the media and stuff like that. Like, because I find what happens is it's kind of like when you were talking about the, you know, you talk to a chief one-on-one, it's different. I find out here in the West, when I talk to Métis people, and I've been very vocal about this during the last, you know, round of elections we had out here for the organizations. A lot of people were asking, when are we going to finally, you know, invite the Eastern family back to the table? And there was really no answer given. And so I find that interesting that as organizations, it's this fight against including, you know, 200, 300 years more of history, of, you know, Métis history. But when you're one-on-one with Métis, they're very open to the idea. So I guess some of the negativity, how do you guys communicate that with, like, how does your community feel when they read these articles and, you know, how do your members respond to some of this negativity about, you know, you guys?
Listen, they pretty well just ignore it, you know?
Yeah.
You don't respond. We see a lot of stuff on social media and you just don't respond to the negative stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're just getting into an argument with very ignorant people, you know.
Absolutely.
It doesn't get you anything but pissed off, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It is an exercise in frustration for sure.
Very much so.
So have along that lines with all these so-called researchers decrying they've proven that there no Métis exist. Has anybody ever actually come to your community, to your organization, and sat down and asked to, you know, look at your genealogical stuff or, you know, any of these researchers that they claim that they've researched all the Métis on the East and then none of them are Métis. Has anybody ever come to you with that?
There's been tons of research actually done on the Acadian.
Yeah.
One of them was think a Royal Commission report kind of thing.
Okay.
And they did a study, and they only studied literature between, I forget exactly the years, but it was when like 1740 to 1780 or something like that, when it was under British rule around here. The scope was so limited, you know what I mean, and never came to any kind of conclusion, and they never talked to anybody.
Really?
You know, just studying literature, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past we've had what's his name, Patrick, he was the president of CAP, Congress of Aboriginal People.
Oh okay.
He came down, you know what I mean, but that never came to anything.
Yeah.
We've been studied for it, you know what I mean, but a couple of years ago we had a meeting with INAC. Three people from INAC came and met with us, and nothing ever came of it. You know,
really?
We gave them all kinds of, you know, documents and proofs and all this stuff, and they go back to Ottawa. Oh no, they didn't give us nothing. You know what I mean?
Wow.
They deny, you know, and basically what they came down to is going to take a major court case.
Right.
You know, while yeah. we're trying to try and avoid, you know, multi-million dollar court cases
yeah. you know,
to get recognition. But the way that the federal government is talking, they'd rather negotiate than legislate, you know, or take fight us in court, you know. Okay,
yeah.
fine, but they won't talk to us.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I applied last year for what's it called now, court challenges program.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, but it cannot be for anything that has to do with Aboriginals. Okay, so
fine.
So I applied. Well, the federal government, this is federal. Federal government doesn't see us as Aboriginals.
Wow.
But yet we were turned down because we're Aboriginal. It's like we're caught in a catch-22, you know.
Well, that is a very interesting perspective. You're too Aboriginal to get into that program, and you're not Aboriginal enough to get recognized. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, they use it to their advantage. You know, they twist words around and things like that.
Well, I get the general sense from the federal government that it's a way to minimize financial responsibility. Is that kind of how you guys feel as well, or?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
You know, right now we're not asking for money. You know what I mean? Just give us recognition. You know, what we need, what we, you know, tell. We already know who we are, you know?
Yeah. So I guess in a perfect world, let's say they recognized, you know, let's say they even recognized just your association. What would be your goal beyond that? So if you get recognized as, you know, as Indigenous people, what would be the ultimate goal from that? Would it be just that recognition and acceptance, or?
Good question. Our goals, actually. People think that our goals are hunting and fishing, you know.
Yeah.
But they're not. You know, everything's already to a max here. You know, hunting's to a max. There's enough hunting pressure. You know, it's being well managed now. You can't suddenly give all these people open rights to year-round hunting.
Yes.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Or fishing. Fishing, you know, the pressure on the fishing industry is at a max already.
Right.
Our goals are actually, number one would be for healthcare.
Okay.
You know, for our members, you know, to get the prescription drugs, their elders to get their glasses, their false teeth. Hearing aids are like 3,000-4,000, I hear. You know, I have a neighbor who's wearing hearing aids from somebody, a friend of his who passed away, you know, because he can't afford his hearing aids. There's something wrong there. My son is a pharmacist, and it brings him just about to tears when a woman walks in with a child, and she has prescriptions for two puffers. One, let's say, is $10 and the other one is $100. And he knows that puffers are for the little girl, for the child.
Yeah.
And she only gets the one that's $10.
Wow.
you know, we need help with health care.
Yeah.
Especially for our elders. They're not getting the medications because they can't afford them, you know. And glasses, and new glasses, and false teeth, and oh my goodness, we could use that help. That's goal number one. Goal number two is post-secondary education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son is a pharmacist after 7 years of university. Incredible how much it costs.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Incredible. We could certainly use some help there to get our young people into universities and community colleges, and then when they're done, they come back to serve us, you know, to serve us in our native language, Acadian language. There's nothing I like more than going to Tim Hortons and ordering my coffee in Acadian French, you know, because I recognized the lady of being Acadian.
You know, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I go to certain places, I talk French to them, you know. It's wonderful. I love it, you know. But we need more of that to come back as policemen and firemen and, yeah. You know, pharmacists and doctors and nurses and that kind of stuff. And
absolutely.
That's one of the reasons why our association gives out $500 bursaries to student members of our association.
Yeah.
You know, as of last year, we've given out $10,000 in bursaries.
Wow.
You know, no small accomplishment, believe me.
Well, and you're doing that without government funding, without, you know, Inspire funding or anything like that, correct?
Nope. We're doing it all on our own, you know. And it came to a point a few years ago that our membership got so large that we were actually almost like victims of our own successes, you know, because we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
And we're all working from home.
Yeah.
You know, and so we got ourselves an office in Comovit, and we have an office secretary.
Wow.
You know, and I'll tell you, since we have an office and a secretary, the job of president has been a hell of a lot easier.
I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely.
Because board of directors was doing everything, you know what I mean? This kind of stuff. So now we have, but still we are volunteering. And sometimes I do get calls at work, you know what I mean, on my cell phone. And it's like, I have to, well, you take the call, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But now most of the stuff goes to our office. And we have a wonderful office secretary, Claire. She was retired. She was a secretary at University of Saint-Anne, you know, so
yeah,
she's just wonderful.
Well, and it's amazing to hear that you've done all this stuff, like I said, without, you know, major government funding or anything like that. So how does the provincial government see, I guess, what's their attitude towards your organization, and are they a little more open to it, or?
Probably a little less open to it.
Oh, really?
Than the federal government. Yeah. Basically, they'll say, we'll follow whatever the federal government directs, you know, for the Métis in this province.
Wow.
Because it's a federal jurisdiction, you know what I mean? This kind of stuff, the Métis. Yeah. So, anyhow.
Wow. So, but, I guess, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you know, the Métis, the term wasn't used until this year and, you know, until people were at Red River. Were you, like, I guess, fill us in a little bit. Was the term Métis or version of that used historically in your, you know, in Acadia and in that area?
Historically, it was mostly sans mêlée, which means mixed blood.
Okay.
You know, that was used. But some used the term Métis.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while, you know, I've seen the first Métis to be baptized was a Jesuit priest, I believe. And I forget the year. It was way back, 16-something. He wrote, today I baptized a Métis child. You know what I mean? So
oh,
historically,
wow.
Yes, every now and then it was. But mostly sans mêlée, which is the definition of Métis. So they use the definition of Métis, mixed blood.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was historically used. I mean, Métis was just used a term at a convenience to be a little more accurate than half-breed or, you know, that kind of thing. So,
Oh yeah, we Bob Roulet. We've been called all kinds of things. Actually, as of lately, with social media, we've even been called dirty land pirates.
Oh wow! There you go. That's a good one.
Oh, I like that one. That's my favorite.
Wow. Well, and I think it's really sad. I mean, you know, you have an organization like yourselves that are trying to actually do things for your community. And that's your focus, it seems. And yet you got to kind of fight through this war of East versus West, that I think is honestly just an imaginary made up line.
That's all it is. And if you look at the Métis National Council's map there, every time I look at it, it's changed. You know what I mean? Now they don't even have Sault Ste. Marie in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, what would they do around here? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk endlessly about the ridiculousness of that map, but because there's a lot of Blackfoot in Alberta that are not impressed with that map either. So,
yeah, I can believe it. But that kind of stuff, I kind of leave it to the Métis Federation of Canada to be dealing with that.
Yeah,
you know, we'll handle the local stuff. You know.
Yeah, for sure. Now you guys joined with them or kind of partnered with the Métis Federation of Canada. What was, what was your reasoning behind that, and what did you feel like you gained from that?
That happened about 7-8 years ago, actually, when I took president of the first time, and I realized that it was time to get out of our own little quaint little corner here. You know, and look onto the national scene.
Yeah.
And I found that the Métis Federation of Canada, they were just starting up kind of thing. They were maybe a year old. And actually went to visit them, you know, just to check them out. So I went to see Robert Pino, you know, and met some super duper nice people. And I was just there like on a fact-finding mission. And who do I meet there but Pierrette Laura and Serge from Maniwaki.
Oh, okay. You know?
And they signed. They signed a treaty with the MFC.
Yeah. You know?
And the next morning we had breakfast. We all had breakfast, a whole bunch of us at a restaurant. And I sat directly across from Pierrette on purpose, you know. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, what convinced you to sign with them? And she said, this is the first group that we've ever talked to that they don't want our money. They're not asking for money.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. And she was absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, so a couple of months later, and I still owe her breakfast. She paid for my breakfast, by the way. I like that. I owe Pierre my breakfast, you know.
There you go. Yeah. It's official now. It's going to be on the air now, so it's official.
Yeah, so a couple of months after that, we decided, okay, let's get on board. So Pierrette with the MFC. So Pierrette was the first one to sign up with the MFC, and we were number two to sign a treaty of peace, friendship, and cooperation with them. And we've never looked back since then, you know.
Yeah.
It really put us on the national scene kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're very vocal. You know what I mean? Or very much involved, but we see everything now. You know what I mean? We see what's happening. You know, and when it came to the Daniels case, you know, with Chris Devlin being intervener, you know, nobody heard about us, but we were certainly there. At least our money was there.
Yeah.
We were a major, major financial supporter behind that.
Wow.
You know, I can still remember signing checks for $5,000 at a time, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Having Chris Devlin's law firm, it wasn't cheap, you know. It was worth every penny.
Well, that's just it. Those Supreme Court cases are not cheap, but definitely that was money well spent, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I was so proud to see Nova Scotia mentioned in the decision, and they mentioned La Haye, you know what I mean? It was, and I know it has everything to do with what Chris Devlin did in those proceedings. You know what I mean? Otherwise than that, you just don't see that usually in Supreme Court decisions.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. It's interesting, too, because Le Havre seems to be in quite a few, like, I think it's in the Royal Commission of Aboriginal People, even. And yet they claim that there's no Métis in the East, and yet they claim that that's a traditional Métis community.
Right.
So, I mean, just on that one example, it seems kind of weird to me.
It's a historic Métis community. I don't believe there's any Métis there left now, living there kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
There's a Métis cemetery. There's an old fort, which is now a museum, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if there are, I don't know of any Métis that would be living right there in Le Havre right now.
But it is recognized. Like, I've seen it, you know, not only in the Daniels decision, but I'm sure it was the Royal Commission. It's just interesting that it gets mentioned quite a bit, and yet everybody, and then still people are saying, well, there's no Métis in the East. So I don't know. It seems to be one of those weird, there is and there isn't. Kind of like, you're Aboriginal enough for this, but not enough for that.
Yeah, that's right. You're stuck in a catch-22 there.
Yeah.
You know. But anyhow, so I was on Aboriginal Day 7 or 8 years ago. I went to Oshawa and signed a treaty with the MFC, Robert Pilon, Sebastian Mallet was there, you know, I met Louise Vien, you know, just all great people, Carol Dumont, you know, they were all great people, you know. I came back and reported to the board, their board of directors, you know what I mean, and I told them, these people have their hearts in the right place.
Right on.
Which is what I was looking for. You know, I didn't care if they had money. I didn't care if they, you know what I mean? Was their heart in the right place? And the answer was yes. You know?
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all good, you know. And I met Louise Vien. She was making a sash by hand, you know.
Wow.
And I was absolutely amazed.
Yeah.
You know, and I told her my name. My name is Joseph Jacquard. And she stopped and she looked at me. She goes, do you realize that the looms that sashes are made on are called Jacquard looms? I said, yes, I do. And she had the whole history of the sashes. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Basically, people from out west now acknowledge that the sashes actually came from Quebec.
Yes.
But she knew that the sashes came to Quebec from Nova Scotia, deported Acadians. The Acadians brought the know-how how to make sashes by hand from France to Nova Scotia, deported to Quebec. You know what I mean? The governor of Quebec didn't know what to do with all these women with nothing to do, so he put them to work making sashes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and from there the sashes went west with the fur trade.
Yeah.
So where did the sashes originate from? The Acadians.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's one of the interesting things, too, about a lot of the iconography of the Red River Métis is that a lot of that stuff might have been changed in Red River slightly, but like the cart and stuff. But a lot of it stems from the East and you know, kind of.
Absolutely. It all comes from here. You know, when I talked to some guys from the West, from Alberta. I talked to a bunch of them actually at the Daniels Symposium that the Congress of Aboriginal People put on in Ottawa.
Yeah.
I was there. And they were talking about their history, their earlier history, you know what I mean, this kind of stuff. And they were only going back 200 years.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder you can find all the documentation.
Exactly.
You know, your ancestors and stuff, you're only 200 years old.
Yeah.
We're 400 years. You know, we're 400 years old. Big difference. Plus, we went through a deportation, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention three scalping proclamations, you know, where it's claimed that almost as many Acadians were scalped as Mi'kmaqs were scalped.
Right.
In this province. The Mi'kmaqs population came down to 1,500, you know.
Wow.
You know, there was a bounty on the scalps. There was a lot of money back then for a scalp. They, you know, hardly any difference in a Mi'kmaq scalp from an Acadian Métis scalp.
Yeah.
You know, and it's even there's documentation where the gentleman who was actually paying the scalps, paying the bounty on the scalps, he told his helper, his employee, yeah, go ahead and pay him while I turn my back, because he knew they weren't Mi'kmaq scalps. They were Acadian.
Wow. Well, I think that's the kind of the thing that always disappoints me is you've had, you know, like you said, another over 200 years of history. But it's not been a flowery, wonderful history. It's been a history of, you know, colonization and trying to eliminate you, just as it's happened everywhere on this continent. And so I find that argument of, well, you guys don't have the documentation from your history that we do. And I agree with you. It's like, well, yeah, but you only have the last 200 years. Whereas, you know, a lot of the churches were burned. They were, you know, a lot of things were lost during the deportation and all these other kinds of things. So I always kind of find it kind of sad that people look at it like, well, you don't have it, so it's gone.
You don't have it, so it's gone. So, you're not it. You know what I mean? No, we know who we are. We know who our bloodlines are. You know, we know where we're from and we know where we're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there are people digging stuff up. You wouldn't believe it. You know, but there's always new science. There's DNA, you know, that's mm-hmm. coming in. We have members, you know, from Louisiana. We have some in the United States. We have members in every province in Canada from my association. You know what I mean? There's Acadians are spread out everywhere. It's absolutely amazing. Our community, because of deportation, it is so spread out, mm-hmm. you know, that we couldn't just have members just from southwestern Nova Scotia, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how, one of the reasons why we went signing a treaty with the MFC, you know, we had to go more national.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
But the MFC takes care of things on the national scene. We just hold our own here, you know?
Yeah.
This kind of stuff. Plus, we're also, my association, AMS, we're also a part of the Alliance of Nova Scotia Métis.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, yeah, so we signed a treaty. There's l'Association des Acadiens Métis Souriquois, which is us, and Bradour Lakes Métis Nation, Eastern Shore Métis, and Highlands Métis.
Okay.
Highlands. So it covers the whole province.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? From one end to the other. Highlands are in Cape Breton and around Cheticamp, you know?
Yep.
And we're in southwestern Nova Scotia. And we try and make a point of it to meet at least once a year at a halfway point kind of thing. And it's wonderful. And I'm in daily contact with these people, you know, via messenger.
Wow. So when it comes to that kind of an organizations coming together like that within the province, do they all hold kind of similar values as to what their goals are as well? Like, it's not, like you said, it's not about hunting and fishing. It's about culture and language and community and you know, taking care of people within that community. Is that kind of the general census amongst those organizations?
Absolutely. Okay. There's no doubt about it. They see it very much the same way. Although, see, at my end of the province, there's no moose around here.
Yeah.
You know, there might be three or something like that.
Yeah.
Very rare, you know. Well, at the other end, in Cape Breton, there's all kinds of moose.
Right.
So their focus is, you know, but I do know their focus is more on moose hunting, that kind of stuff. There is some hunting goals there kind of thing. But I know that conservation is their number one priority.
Right.
You know, they don't want to take every moose, you know, this kind of stuff. And they also don't want to take anything away from the Mi'kmaq.
Okay. Yeah, no, so that's definitely good to hear. I really appreciate you, you know, sharing that with us. It's these kinds of things that we don't hear out west, you know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the media out here, if I was to go, if I didn't know what I knew and I just was looking at media, not even social media, just media like APTN and things like that, the general census of what we're hearing out here is everybody that claims to be Métis in the East is simply looking for a free ride. They're looking, they want to be tax-free. They want to be, they want to hunt everything that they can possibly hunt and fish everything they can possibly fish. And they just want to trample over top of everybody else's rights. And you know, yeah. I know that's not true, but if you were just, I guess if you were less educated about Eastern Métis, why would you doubt this? I mean, it's on APTN, it's on, you know, news articles.
Right.
You know, so and it's really good to hear what you're saying.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are unsavory types around here that'll push that agenda also. You know, we have a university professor from St. Mary's University in Nova Scotia here.
Yeah.
You know, my goodness, God, he wrote a book, he got a research grant and things like that, and wrote a book about us and never contacted one Métis organization or one Métis in the province.
But he wrote a book about you.
But he wrote a book about us.
Wow.
You know, I'm very much for the movement that says nothing about us without us, you know.
Yeah.
Don't write anything about us without talking to us.
You know, you would think that would be the first thing you did if you're going to write a book about somebody.
It would seem to me.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway. And, of course, that there are other Métis organizations, smaller ones, that push their own agendas, you know what I mean? This kind of stuff. But they're not part of this alliance, you know. Anyhow, there are some, I've met some people from Quebec, you know what I mean? Some groups are very much on the same page as us, while there's others that certainly questionable. Their motives are very questionable, you know. So it doesn't matter how many... There's always going to be some rotten apples in there, you know, but you don't want the rotten ones to infest the good ones, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing that's missed is, you know, yes, there's always going to be, no matter where you are, there's always going to be somebody trying to game a system or has their own agenda. But right. I think the sad thing is that everybody in the East, you know, and even Ontario now, most of Ontario Métis now are getting painted this way, where they're all, they're all like that. Everybody's like that. And it's like, no, that's like a small, small portion of people.
Yeah. But unfortunately, that small minority is getting most of the press time because it makes, you know, for more interesting stories. That's what people want to hear, you know?
Absolutely.
It's the bad stuff.
Yeah. Well, it creates the clicks and the views on the internet that media need, right? And so they need to create controversy,
right?
And this is a real easy one. I always look at it like they always kind of fall back on this one because it's so easy for them to fall back on and just create a story out of this for, you know, that they in case they need something.
Right on. And some of them actually set up interviews. I've turned down interviews with media, national media organizations, because I could tell it was going to be a setup.
Yeah.
You know, they'll ask me for an interview, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm there. Who else is going to be in an interview? Oh, this guy's going to be interviewed. Somebody from the MNC is going to be interviewed. This lousy professor from St. Mary's University is going to be there. No thanks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. No.
Well, why would you waste your time, right?
All you want to do is try and create controversy, you know what I mean? This kind of stuff. And to have a university professor that employs no ethics whatsoever, you know.
Yeah.
I have no interest in speaking with this gentleman or being part of an interview with him.
Well, you know, so people have asked us that too about having certain people on the show, and I've just said, what's the point? Like they don't, there's nothing that they would add of value, even though they might have a PhD. They don't know these communities. They don't, like, why would I even talk to them? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Talking of PhDs, it's like, I remember first time I met Sebastian Mallet, you know?
Yeah.
Holy moly. This guy's got it together. You know,
well, I'm definitely a big fan of Sebastian and you know, his books and his co-authors, because they
Yeah.
They seem very intelligent in how they go about finding and researching and putting this information together. And I'm a huge fan. So
yeah, same here. They certainly they do their due diligence, you know.
Yeah.
And you can use their books as reference books, you know.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, I know that other people try to take little snippets from their books and stuff and turn it into something awful. But the truth is if you look at the totality of the information they're sharing, like there isn't, I don't know how they're, you know, you can't really go through and say, oh, they're making this up or they're lying about this, because it's all referenced to things.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
So I always find that interesting.
Yeah.
So
but
what
you take people like the the leadership of the MNC, you know, talking badly about Nova Scotia Métis groups when they've never even contacted us.
Yeah.
You know, they don't know.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they haven't even looked at our website, you know, and what we try and put out on social media is all positive stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the way that to handle these naysayers and people will call us names like, dirty land pirates, that kind of stuff. To come back with them, you put the good stuff out. You know what I mean? This kind of stuff. We used to have, our association used to have a Facebook page, but it got polluted with all kinds of negative, nasty stuff. We just, we archived it. We don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, but we do have carry a blog on our website,
yep.
You know, and we put all kinds of interesting stuff on there, and people just love it, you know. And we're on Instagram and Twitter and probably LinkedIn.
Well, I think you're right. I think that is a great way to approach, you know, counteracting the negativity is just staying positive. Like, just ignore what they're saying and just do your thing, and, you know, time will tell.
Correct. You know, eventually, some of these people, eventually, we have a saying around here, just give them more rope. Just keep giving them, let them take all the rope they want.
Yeah.
Eventually, they'll hang themselves with it.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah.
There you go. The truth will prevail. It will come out.
Well,
unfortunately, it doesn't make news, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And I think right now, I think I'd like to think we're seeing that a little bit, where a lot of these, you know, the Métis Nation conglomerate of organizations is I would like to say they're pretty much falling apart at this point, because even they can't determine who is and who's not Métis within themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of issues there. I don't want to go into them, but I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to, because I've had a few people now contact me and just say, you know, I thought these guys, you know, knew what they were talking about, but they're now saying that communities that were Métis or not Métis, they're like, how do you trust what they say? So I think the more that they falter, I think more people will recognize that the things they've been saying have been pretty hypocritical and not fact-based so much, you know, about Eastern Métis.
Absolutely. The truth will come out. The truth will prevail.
Yeah.
It will win, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're the ones with the millions of dollars, and we're the ones on very low budgets, you know.
Absolutely.
So
how is your, I guess the last thing I wanted to ask, just because we're going through this whole COVID thing, is how has your community been and your members been as far as, you know, this pandemic? Have they, you know, have there been, I guess, issues, or are they handling it fairly well, or are you guys able to help anybody or anything like that right now?
I would say people are handling it quite well.
Yeah.
It's not, certainly the pandemic is just not as thick around here as Ontario or Toronto, let's say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But everybody's probably keeping their distance. They're trying. At least I see a lot of people trying,
right,
you know,
on.
But there are, I work in the lobster fishing industry. I'm a lobster buyer, and the lobster fishermen are still fishing. They're still going out fishing. It's a food service industry.
Yeah.
You can't stop the food.
Yeah.
Right. So even if this pandemic out west is, still going on in this summer, the farmers are going to have to plant.
Yes.
It's food. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so maybe there's no danger in planting and harvesting, you know, the fields because of social, you know, there is social, by its very nature, social distancing exists there.
Yes.
But somewhere down the line, that those grains are going to have to go into factories and made into cereals. And, you know what I mean? So you got factory workers, you know what I mean? This kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So you can't stop the food industry. It has to go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's tough. I think there's a lot of people that still have to work, but you just have to. I mean, like the truck drivers and basically anybody in a supply chain role is kind of critical right now. So.
Right. So, for lobsters around here, the fishing is still going on, although at a reduced pace and a reduced price.
Yeah.
A lot of our lobsters get shipped to the United States.
Okay.
So we can still ship, but you can't ship if there's nobody there to receive it. You know what I mean? You ship 45,000 pounds of lobsters in a truck. Okay.
Yeah.
And if there's nobody at the plant in Boston working, you know, somebody's got to take it off the truck. They're going to be sorted. They're going to be, you know what I mean?
For just sure. Kinda,
and ship. And then they keep going from there, you know?
Absolutely.
So I was talking to the owner of a shipping company, a trucking company down here, and where they were sending 2 18-wheelers per day to Boston, and with stops in Maine, New Hampshire, Boston, all over, down to Cape Cod, full of lobsters, okay? And they're down, instead of two a day, they're down to one a week.
Oh, wow.
And last week, they canceled.
Oh, geez. Yeah, no, you know, it's tough. It's going to be, and it sounds like it's going to be a lot longer than what people were expecting, so.
Right. So there are also communities in Nova Scotia where their lobster season is closed right now, but it's due to open the 1st of May.
Yeah.
You know, and they have like a very short season, 2 months, May and June.
Right.
And that's their income, the bulk of their income for the year.
Wow.
You know? And it's like, if they don't open, God help us, what's going to happen there?
And obviously, you guys were not contacted by the federal government for any of the relief money that they've, as an organization, you're not getting any money from the federal government to deal with this, are you?
No, nothing at all.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. See, and I think that's a shame, too. Like, it's such a stark contrast. Like, you know, here in the prairies, three of the provinces are getting like $7.5 million.
Right.
Like, it's just, it's amazing that clearly you guys, you know, you're not recognized by the government because you're not getting anything. So it's pretty sad.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah.
It is.
Because you said, you still got elders that you need to make sure are safe and take care of them. And
absolutely. You know, I at home, I have my 87-year-old mother. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's quite spry, believe me, you know. But I do have to be careful. I just don't want to bring this home, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. You well, know, is there anything else that you kind of want to share? Because we're coming close to an hour, and I just want to make sure we got out any messages that you wanted to kind of let people know about your organization or just Eastern Métis in general. Is there anything that we didn't say?
I don't think so. I think I pretty well covered it.
Okay.
I'd just like to repeat that the Mi'kmaq have absolutely nothing to fear from us. They have everything to gain from our friendship, while the Métis National Council has everything to fear from us.
That's a lovely way to put that. I love that. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and you know, I hope we can maybe have you back on once we're through this all this COVID stuff. Maybe a few months from now, maybe after summer or something, just have you on and we'll see where we're
sure
at again.
And,
but I definitely would love to have you back.
I can't believe it's already been an hour. My God.
I know.
I love talking about this stuff.
Well, that's just it. When it comes to Métis stuff, I end up having hours and hours of conversation. So I have to cut myself off.
Yeah. Anyhow.
But I do appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Hey, no problem, Darcy.
All right. You have
Call
yourself.
Me anytime.
You bet. Have a good day.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, I want to thank Joseph again for being on the show. It was a great conversation. We could have talked for a long time, I think. But I think what their message is was amazing. I think the way that they approach their organization from a community standpoint, to work for the community and for the community members that they have, is such a stark contrast to a lot of the organizations that we have here in the West, where it seems to be, let's fight against our members at every chance that we can. Let's do what's best for the organization, and you know, the members can just kind of come along for the ride. In my opinion, that's what it seems like. So I just really appreciate them coming on. They are on Instagram. And if you, you know, you can look them up on the internet. You can, you know, Google search for AAMS, Métis, and it'll be probably the first thing that comes up. But check out their website. It's definitely, I'll put the link in the description of the show. They have, you know, a blog post, they have news and views, they have communications. If you want to learn more about their organization, you certainly can there. It has all their, you know, their goals, their missions, their vision, the bursaries that they hand out, things like that. So it even has a place to explain the logo of the organization. And I'm quite happy to have had him on. And I hope people start to see Eastern Métis in a different light. I mean, there's always going to be one or two bad apples, but like he said, you know, there's a lot of good people out there that are working to just make things a little bit easier and better for you know, the Métis out there. So I appreciate him being on, and I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. Until next time, the jig is up.